We'll hear argument now in number 87-168, Russell Frisbee versus Sandra C. Schultz and Robert C. Brown. Mr. Furman, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, this case is an appeal from a judgment of the United States Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit. This judgment was adopted by an equally divided court through a vote of 5-5. The effect of the judgment was to affirm the order of the United States District Court for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. That order contained an injunction that enjoined the enforcement of an ordinance of the town of Brookfield. That ordinance provided for the prohibition of picketing before and about any residence or dwelling in the town of Brookfield. After that ordinance was adopted, the appellees commenced this legal action seeking declaratory relief and an injunction against the enforcement of the ordinance. They immediately asked for a preliminary injunction, and that was granted. In the request for the preliminary injunction, it was argued that there was a violation of the Equal Protection Clause as well as the First Amendment, and that particular part of the argument of the appellees was not ruled upon favorably by the district court, and there was no cross appeal from that particular part of the order. An appeal from the order as a whole was taken by the appellants, that is, by the town of Brookfield, and proceeded to the United States Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit. Before all of this occurred, I should point out that the initial ordinance adopted by the town of Brookfield provided an exception to the prohibition against picketing, namely an exception in favor of labor disputes. When the town attorney became aware of the fact that that ordinance had been adopted, he advised the chief of police not to enforce it until he had an opportunity to study its constitutionality. After he had reread the case of Carey versus Brown, he advised the town board to repeal that ordinance in deference to this court's decision in Carey versus Brown. The town board did precisely that. Subsequently, they adopted the current ordinance, which has a uniform prohibition against residential picketing without any exception. And this also was in recognition of footnote number 2 of this court's decision in Carey versus Brown, in which this court stated that it was reserving judgment on the question of whether or not an ordinance that uniformly prohibited picketing without exception.
Did it say prohibit? It just said regulate, didn't it?
Well, never mind. Maybe I have the wrong.
Well, footnote 2 reads as follows. Because the Court of Appeals concluded that the labor dispute exception was not severable from the remainder of the statute, it invalidated the enactment in its entirety. The Court therefore found it unnecessary to consider the constitutionality under the First Amendment of the statute that prohibited all residential picketing. Because we find the present statute defective on equal protection principles, we likewise do not consider whether a statute barring all residential picketing, regardless of its subject matter, would violate the First and 14th Amendments. So that's and so that situation then is now a situation that is squarely before the court today, because we do have an ordinance that prohibits all residential picketing without the labor exception. The fact situation that gave rise to the adoption of these two ordinances was a period of picketing of approximately 3 weeks had been conducted by the appellees and their associates before the home of one Dr. Benjamin Victoria, a resident of the town of Brookfield. The purpose of the picketing was to denounce him as an abortionist and as a killer of babies. The town board had no desire to get involved in this debate. However, it was appalled at the invasion of privacy that occurred, and also it was appalled at the
This picketing was at the doctor's home, wasn't it?
It was at the doctor's home.
He didn't operate a clinic, did he, from his home?
No, he did not.
Just where he lived?
That was just where he lived. In fact, he had two clinics, one in Milwaukee and one in another city, but not in the
Not in Brookfield.
Not in the town of Brookfield, right. So, in oral argument today, I propose to concentrate on three principal points. First is that the district court order was a final order. Second, that the residential streets of the town of Brookfield are not public fora. And third, that assuming arguendo that the streets of the town of Brookfield are public fora, that nevertheless the ordinance is a valid and constitutional regulation of time, place, and manner, and to achieve two important governmental interests, the one being residential privacy and the other being public safety.
Mr. Furman, we are reviewing, I guess, the preliminary injunction. So is our standard of review whether the lower court abused its discretion in the issuance of the injunction?
We contend it is not, and I'd like to point out to perhaps at this point that although the order of the district court is in form a preliminary injunction, actually, however, it has finally decided the constitutional issue involved, at least from the standpoint of the district court. Now, I realize...
You still want to go to trial?
No. Let me explain. The preliminary injunction, so-called, said that it would become final in the event there were no request for a trial, number one, by any party, and number two, that an appeal would be taken. So to protect the interests of the town of Brookfield, we did appeal and we did file a request for a trial. But the it's clear from the reading of the order that the court had already determined that it would be unnecessary to have an evidentiary hearing. And there were two reasons for that. Number one, it was stipulated by both parties that an evidentiary hearing was not necessary. And number two, the way in which this ordinance was attacked by the plaintiffs was not in a factual context at all. They attacked it facially before it ever had an opportunity to be enforced. Shortly after the ordinance was adopted, there was a request for the preliminary injunction, and so this particular ordinance has yet to be enforced. And so there is no factual context within which the district court could construe the ordinance. It is purely a matter of law. If there were to be a trial, the trial would be purely on that constitutional issue.
Mr. Fuhrman, can I ask whether this ordinance would prohibit someone picketing in
generally, that is, suppose a picket was not stationed in front of this doctor's house, but would a group of people be able to parade through the neighborhood carrying signs and just leave?
Yes.
What does picketing consist of under the ordinance?
Although the ordinance contains no definition section, in our opinion, picketing would be having the picket proceed in a definite course or route in front of the home. Because keep in mind, the ordinance only prohibits picketing before and about a dwelling or residence.
And that means you have to be concentrating on one dwelling.
That's right. You have
and if you were just walking dwelling. Through the neighborhood, that would not qualify.
That would not qualify.
Suppose you were walking by a home with a picket sign that said, "I'm against the war in the Asian Gulf." Would that be a violation of the statute?
In the town of Brookfield, under this ordinance, it would be.
And what would that damage be to the city?
The damage would be to privacy, because the ordinance is content neutral. It has nothing to do with the message at all.
So if you had some people marching up and down these streets saying, "Vote for so-and-so for sheriff," that would be banned too.
If Justice Scalia asked, it was a march, the answer would be that it would not be in violation of the ordinance. However, if the pickets actually pursued a route only in front of this particular house, a particular house which is targeted, then it would be a violation.
Do the findings of fact, excuse me.
Go ahead.
Do the findings of fact indicate that there is a commercial area or business area in which picketing can take place? Was that a stipulation or a finding?
It's an uncontested fact, yes. There are two commercial areas in the town of Brookfield along the Bluon Road.
Near this residence? Commercial areas anywhere near this residence?
No.
Is the doctor's clinic in Brookfield or is it elsewhere?
It's elsewhere.
How far away is the nearest commercial area on Bluemont Road from this residence?
I would estimate approximately 3 miles.
What's the width of the street there?
The width of the residential streets in the town of Brookfield are 30 feet. And this, of course, gives...
Sidewalks?
And there are no sidewalks, no curb and gutter. And this, of course, brings you into focusing upon the public safety aspect. And I should point out that in our brief, we incorporated by reference the opinion of Judge Coffey of the Seventh Circuit. It was his dissenting opinion. And the reason we did that was because, among other things, he has in his opinion a very good analysis of the safety aspect of this case, and it is printed in the joint appendix, and if it hasn't been read by any member of the court, I would urge it's being read, because I think it's very helpful to an understanding of the case.
We have no record as to the conduct of the pickets. There was picketing, was
there? There was picketing, and there is a record of its conduct. The picketing, however, occurred prior to the adoption of the ordinance. And the reason why that record exists is because the picketers had to show their standing to bring the action, and they, of course, had been picketing right up until the time when the legislation was adopted. And so when the legislation was adopted, then they commenced their action and applied for the preliminary injunction.
What was their conduct?
First of all, there were pickets of 11 to 40 people picketing off and on over a period of approximately 3 weeks. Their conduct was to denounce the doctor and
Announce them how, vocally or signs?
Both vocally and by sign. He was described as a baby killer, and there were other picturesque phrases which are in the record.
Stop abortion, and abortion is murder.
Yes, among other things. Yes, Justice Marshall.
You're not complaining about that?
No, we're not complaining about that. We're complaining about two things: the invasion of the privacy of this residence, and also the threat to public safety. And
you're still relying on the threat to public safety?
Yes, we are.
Although you just told me that that it'd be no problem if the picketers kept moving throughout the whole neighborhood.
Well,
there's less of a threat if it occurs in the whole neighborhood than if it occurs in front of one house.
As we pointed out in our brief, in the event you have a parade rather than simply a picket, you do have a less hazardous situation. We concede, first of all, that any walking on the street by pedestrians is dangerous, but it is more dangerous if you have a picket line, because you have these people not actually in continuing movement. You have them moving only a short distance and then turning around and following their picket route, you see.
You'll forgive me if I don't find that self-evident. I think it surely depends on how people are walking and what they're doing. And you could be walking the same way throughout the whole neighborhood, two abreast or back and forth or whatever.
Well,
it seems to me if you're focusing on the fact that it's in front of one house, that it must have something to do with matters other than safety.
Well, your record certainly contains instances of interference, does it not?
Well, the record contains instances of interference, which, of course, goes beyond picketing, and such as obstructing the driveway and trespassing upon property. Now, as has been pointed out by the appellees, there are ordinances addressed to those particular problems. The point that we're discussing today really is the picketing ordinance itself.
Mr. Furman, would the town prohibit appellees from standing in the street in front of the house and handing out leaflets containing the same messages as on the signs?
No. It's our understanding that leafleting is not covered by this ordinance. Now, I could conceive of a situation where a picketer might have leaflets and do two different things, but leafleting is not picketing.
Well, what is a picketer? Does a picketer have to have a sign?
Doesn't have to have a sign. He might...
Suppose he just stands there handing out leaflets, but he stands right at the one spot. Is that picketing?
If he is following a picket route, he's picketing.
Well, I'll give you the facts. There's the house, the lot's 60 feet, and he, in order to just amuse himself, goes up and down that 60 feet until somebody comes out, and then he gives him a leaflet.
All right. But what I'm saying is he is performing two functions. One, he is picketing, and one, he is leafleting.
Suppose he just stands in one spot and hands out the leaflet. Picket?
Not a picket.
But if he moves on a 10 feet either way, then that is a picket?
If he is moving and following a picket route, is a picket, right?
Even if he's not carrying a sign?
That is true. As for instance, although I'm not aware of any appellate court decisions on this, there have been instances where a member of the Ku Klux Klan has picketed from one point to another point, following a picket route in a residential area, and that would be a violation of the ordinance.
You mean, let's assume he was in a black neighborhood and he walked up and down a whole block, didn't concentrate on one house. Is that picketing?
Then it would not be picketing, right, within the meaning of our ordinance.
Well, he's concentrating on all the houses there, giving all the houses the same
message.
I
understand what you're saying. And I'm simply drawing the distinction between picketing and parading.
Mr. Furman, do you say that a single picketer, let's say present 1 hour a day in front of a residence substantially interferes with the residential privacy?
I certainly do. Let's just take the Ku Klux Klan picketer that I just mentioned before. Certainly, one picket making that route back and forth in front of one home that he's targeting would violate the privacy of that owner.
1 hour a day or half an hour?
Yes, ma'am, I would say so.
Or once a week?
I would say that if he did it once a week, it would also be a violation of the privacy of that home.
Sufficiently substantial to justify the First Amendment infringement.
It certainly would. The second point that we plan to discuss was the matter of the streets of Brookfield not being a public forum. Now, we realize, of course, that there are cases that have substantial dicta indicating the repetition of the cliché that streets are quintessential public forum since time immemorial. And we believe that the key word in that cliché is the word immemorial. We realize that
one man's cliché is another man's fundamental principle. You be careful.
Touché. nevertheless, I think we have to really realize the historical origin of this. many, many years ago, the streets of ancient Rome converged upon a public square known as the Forum, and all of the principal buildings were at the Forum, and that Forum was certainly the place of discussion, of debate, and all other forums have derived their name from that location. We submit, however, that in 20th century United States, to say that every street is a public forum is simply a statement contrary to fact. Take, for instance, the major arteries of the interstate highway system. Here you have a system of arteries that penetrate all of the major cities of the United States. Nevertheless, they are cordoned off.
Billboards are forbidden on some of them, aren't they?
Beg your pardon?
Billboards are forbidden on some of them, aren't they?
Right, but they're cordoned off by cyclone fences from the pedestrians, and for a darn good reason, because the volume of traffic, the velocity of traffic is such that to say that that would be a forum for picketing and other forensic activity is just ridiculous. And nevertheless, we have the old cliché, or fundamental principle. And on the other hand, we have the opposite extreme. We have these 30-foot roads in suburban Brookfield, which are so small, so narrow, that only one car can travel in each direction at the same time. No curbs, no gutters, no sidewalks. Basically, it's an inherently hazardous situation for any pedestrian as a matter of res ipsa loquitur, simply by accepting these basic facts which are undisputed. We say, and then of course...
That argument might cut two ways, because if there are no sidewalks, I presume when someone has to go for a walk, that person must walk on the street. So drivers should
realize... Or across his neighbor's lawn.
They encourage trespassing in Brookfield.
Well, trespassing is a matter of intent, because if the neighbor consents...
Isn't it normal? In a lot of neighborhoods like that, you do, in fact, walk along the edge of the road, don't you?
This does happen.
So that I would think the drivers would be aware of the fact that that is not a heavily trafficked area, I'm sure, and they would know you have to drive rather carefully. What's the speed limit, about 15 miles an hour?
It's 20 miles an hour.
20 miles an hour. It's not high traffic, high speed.
Right? No. And of course, I would concede that any pedestrian on these streets is to some extent at risk.
That, I mean, that sounds like the ordinance is enacted for the protection of the picketer.
Well,
you're really strong.
This is the reason why I am suggesting reading the dissenting opinion of Judge Coffey, because he not only talks about the protection of the picketer, but also upon he also discusses the responsibility of the municipality for the safety of all people on the public highways.
This is quite a separate argument from, frankly, what to me is more persuasive is the interest of the resident in not having someone who's arguably hostile out in front all day long. That's the interest that, frankly, would concern me more than worrying about whether the fellow would step in front of a 15-mile-an-hour school bus.
And that is the interest that Kerry spoke about against Brown, Kerry against Brown.
Well, Kerry versus Brown primarily dealt with the matter of privacy, and in fact,
why don't you talk about that? I really don't think a whole lot of us.
All right.
Hear about this.
We believe that this court should follow its own precedent that it established in the city of Renton case. And protect residential privacy. In Kerry versus Brown, this court stated, preserving the sanctity of the home, the one retreat to which men and women can repair to escape from the tribulations of their daily pursuits, is surely an important issue. Our decisions reflect no lack of solicitude for the right of an individual to be let alone in the privacy of the home, sometimes the last citadel of the tired, the weary, and the sick. This,
Mr.
we
Furman,
believe,
do you think the First Amendment under that precedent would enable a city to prevent door-to-door solicitation and the actual ringing of the doorbell of the red?
I would say that personally, that an ordinance to that effect could be constitutionally valid. I would have to naturally recognize.
You think this court's precedents would support your view?
First of all, I believe at this time we are not arguing that point, of course, and we believe that there has been a division among the circuits on that issue. And as far as the Seventh Circuit is concerned, Seventh Circuit in the Watsika case had determined that this type of activity is
unconstitutional. I thought this court had spoken to that issue.
This court did, because it actually affirmed the decision in the Watsika case.
Well, and those little Green River Ordinance cases, Murdoch against Pennsylvania and Struthers, those were pretty much what Justice O'Connor is talking about, too, weren't they?
Yes.
What about the Austin case, City of Austin, back in 71? They said door-to-door picketing was all right. Door-to-door leafleting was all right.
Leafleting, yes.
And you're going to draw a line between leafleting and picketing?
Now, as a matter of fact, I said I do draw a line between leafleting and picketing, and Justice O'Connor had asked that question before.
I still haven't gotten your answer.
The ordinance of the town of Brookfield only relates to picketing, does not relate to leafleting.
And the difference between leafleting and picketing is what? From a constitutional standpoint.
From a
constitution. They both disturb, don't they?
They do to some extent, although picketing is more invasive because you're actually
targeting. Disturbing, aren't you?
I beg your pardon?
Isn't that what you're against? Disturbing the rest of them?
We're against invading the privacy of the home. And leafleting is less invasive in that regard than picketing.
It's less disturbing, though.
Less disturbing, yes.
I suppose you suggest a bright line that any street that can be classified as a residential street could be subject to an ordinance like this?
The rule that we believe the court should follow is the rule of Cornelius versus NAACP. We believe that that like other publicly owned property, each street should be determined as to whether or not it it lends itself to the First Amendment activity involved.
If you're at the focus of the ordinance is an individual home, what difference would it make what kind of a street it is, as long as the picketing is aimed at one home on a particular street? The invasion of privacy is just as great.
I agree. But we have in our argument really two propositions. Number one, we're arguing that, that the streets of the residential streets of Brookfield are not public fora. And the reason we're making that argument is because that establishes a different standard than for evaluating the ordinance. But we're arguing, number two, that in the event this court should find that, notwithstanding everything that I've said, that all streets, without exception, are public fora, that then, and in that event, the ordinance is still constitutional as a valid time, place, and manner regulation of an of two important governmental interests.
Namely, well, it's going to take a lot of litigation to litigate every street in the country to figure out whether they're public forum or not.
Well, if you had litigation on each and every street, that yes. But on the other hand, we believe that that reason would enter in here, because if you look at the streets of the town of Brookfield and you notice and you know that they're 30 feet in width, you should know that you do not have public forum.
Thank you, Mr. Furman. Now we'll hear now from you, Mr. McDowell.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, before this Court today is an attempted appeal from an order affirming a preliminary injunction. There is no finality, no ultimate determination on the merits of the constitutional issue, and therefore no appeal jurisdiction. In light of the preliminary nature of the case, this case may well be more appropriately handled by way of summary affirmance rather than a comprehensive review of the town's claims which we contend lack support in either the record or the decisions of this Court. The town's case rests fundamentally upon a challenge to two basic premises of First Amendment law, that streets are quintessential public fora, and that picketing, a legitimate, peaceful form of First Amendment expression, is to be permitted in such public fora areas. The District Court, we contend, and we believe, did not abuse its discretion in determining that the picketers were likely to prevail on the merits of their First Amendment claims.
District Court or the Court of Appeals, either one, Mr. McDowell, indicate they thought more facts were necessary in order for them to reach a conclusion on the constitutional issue?
The District Court's opinion indicated that, based upon the facts that are currently in the record, there were sufficient facts to grant the preliminary injunction and, in fact, to grant a final injunction. We believe that this is, in fact, an appropriate determination, because based upon the normal assumptions that are normally made about streets, that they are normally public fora, and also based upon the normal conclusion that picketing is a legitimate form of expression, just based upon the facts as developed there, there would be a sufficient record to make that determination. However, if other facts are sought to be introduced, such as, for example, the question of whether one must move or remain stationary to constitute picketing in the town of Brookfield, perhaps it may be necessary to go back for a further determination.
The town says that it hasn't anything else to offer.
That's correct. And if that be the case, then it would seem that this Court may well wish to go ahead with a final decision on the merits. However, we would point out that there are a number of facts that the town has asserted in its brief, such as the lack of past use for of the streets of the town of Brookfield for picketing, which aren't currently in the record. So if this court wishes to rely on such facts, it may be necessary for a further determination. But based upon the facts now in the record, there is, in fact, evidence sufficient to support a preliminary injunction in favor of the picketers in
this
case.
Well, if the town wants to, if the town submits, wants the issue decided on the present record, does that make it a final judgment?
I'm not certain of that fact because I'm not certain of that point. Normally, a preliminary injunction is considered a non-final order. And secondly, there has not been a square holding on the constitutional issue as of yet because all we have at this point is a preliminary injunction. A final injunction was never issued. The town could have simply allowed a final injunction to be issued, in which case there would be no problem with finality in this case. It chose not to do so. It chose to
Didn't they ask for a trial? I thought they asked for a trial.
They did.
So that they're obviously not satisfied with the record.
Well, that's the way the picketers have to construe the status of the case at this point.
But before us today, I guess Mr. Furman says he doesn't now want a trial. Is that what you heard?
That's what I heard, that's something that's Mr. Furman's decision to make and not the decision of the picketers, since we did not request a trial.
The problem here isn't finality at all, I don't think, under the provisions of the statute. An order granting a preliminary injunction is appealable. The only question is what standard of review do you use in judging whether or not the preliminary injunction was correctly granted? Everybody concedes there was at least a preliminary injunction. That's appealable to the Seventh Circuit, and we have jurisdiction to review a case that's in the Seventh Circuit.
Yes, so it could be reviewed on the basis of an abuse of discretion standard in such a situation. However, there's a question of whether there's a square holding on the constitutional point, because the lower court judge utilized the normal standard that's used in the Seventh Circuit, which is a standard of whether one is likely to prevail.
You were just talking about appellate jurisdiction, weren't you? Not certiorari jurisdiction.
That's correct. We were speaking of appellate jurisdiction.
So if you're talking about jurisdiction, we can always just grant cert.
Oh, certainly.
But that would still leave the standard of review that the Chief Justice was talking about.
That's correct. And, in fact, the district court did not abuse its discretion in granting the preliminary injunction in this case. When we turn to the substance of the case and the merits of the case on the free speech issue.
Mr. McDowell, before you, is this a facial attack on the ordinance?
The attack is more in line of a facial attack, in that what the picketers are challenging is the application of the ordinance to picketers in general and into activity that they would wish to engage in. So is a facial challenge.
Well, if it is, then I take it if there's any set of facts that we can think of about picketing to which the ordinance could constitutionally be applied, you lose, don't you? It's a facial attack.
If it's a facial attack, the question this court would have to determine is whether the ordinance could be appropriately subject to a limiting construction. In this case, the town in its brief indicated that limiting constructions might or might not be possible, but that the town wished to forbid all picketing.
You're not relying on the overbreadth doctrine, then, I take it.
The overbreadth doctrine is a point that we have relied upon at various points. Wasn't the key issue upon which the district court granted its injunction. However, the overbreadth argument has been raised both at the district court and at the Seventh Circuit. And in this case, it may well be that the ordinance sweeps substantially overbroadly with respect to protected expression.
If you can only conceive of one instance in which it's okay, and only one, one might suspect it's overbroad.
That's absolutely correct.
I would think so.
Yes.
I must confess I'm a little puzzled. Your complaint suggests you're concerned about your client's own right to
yes.
Picket, and because they've been threatened with arrest and the district court found what kind of picketing they had engaged in the past, namely 11 to 40 people, and there were some unfortunate remarks and one thing and another of that kind. Should we ask the question whether that particular type of picketing is constitutionally protected?
That type of picketing serves as a background, certainly, that this court can consider and can consider in terms of the motivation, perhaps, of the town in passing this ordinance.
What if we were to assume that that's all it really prohibits and that's all you really care about because you want to engage in exactly what you've done before? And then just focus on that issue instead of all these hypothetical things like leafleting. Would you say that you could picket with 40 persons out in front all day long, 7 days a week in the front of this house?
The problem is that the ordinance forbids more than
Well, first that. Answer my question, would you?
All right. We don't believe that the picketers have an absolute right to picket without respect to
Well, I understand. Do you think they have a constitutional right to engage in the kind of picketing the district court found in this case? 40 yes, persons, yes. You do. 40 persons, 7 days a week, right straight through and all. And if that's true, and if we're focusing on this picketing, what was the audience at which this picketing was directed?
The picketing was directed at both Dr. Victoria and his neighbors.
And you think that much... I see. Thank you.
That's what the affidavits show and the record shows in this case.
What do you mean directed at? Was it in front of the neighbors' houses or in front of his house?
It was in front of his house.
Well, that's generally referred to as picketing him, not picketing his neighbors. I mean,
that's correct. The question I believe that Justice Stevens had was a question as to who the proper audience was.
Right.
Certainly neighbors going back and forth would be able to see the signs and obviously would be an audience.
Ms. McDowell, you mentioned a couple of basic principles of First Amendment law when you started off. Another one, and we just issued an opinion today that adverts to it indirectly, is that picketing is different from other First Amendment activities. It can be intimidating. It's different from leafleting. It's different from pure speech. Why, as far as the merely informative content of letting the neighbors know that this man is an abortionist and that you disapprove of it, as far as that's concerned, you could leaflet, you could slip information under the doors of the neighbors, you could march around the whole neighborhood with a sign, as counsel for the city says is permissible under this ordinance. But you don't want to do that. You want to essentially hassle this doctor, to put it in the vernacular. You want to be in front of his house and bring home to him your displeasure with him in a maybe intimidating isn't the word, but annoying fashion, essentially. Isn't that what's going on? Is there any other reason why you have to picket his house?
We don't claim a right to harass, and in this case, that isn't what was involved, because public issue picketing is in many ways quite similar to leafleting. Because what's involved is the transmission of a message, in this case, a message of opposition to abortion. Picketing was a means utilized. However, what was involved here was not the type of signal that one might have in a labor picketing instance, but instead merely a use of the signs and the picketing to indicate.
Well, when you picket a store, that's a logical place to do that because you're sending your message to the customers of that store. Or a business, or you're picketing a plant that's on strike. You're sending the message to the other workers who might want to come in. To whom are you sending the message here that couldn't get it anywhere else? Why is this a logical place to get this message across to anyone except the doctor whose privacy you're invading?
Well, it's a legitimate place, as the picketers noted in their affidavits, to transmit their message both to the doctor and also to his neighbors.
You can get it to his neighbors very easily. His neighbors don't congregate in front of his house.
The reason why picketing may be particularly a sensible type of procedure by which to transmit such a message is that a picket sign is a sign that a neighbor or anyone going by can look at and notice what the opinions are of the picketers. It's in essence something like a mass media that can be done at a great, at a minimum amount of expense to the picketers.
You could do that walking around the neighborhood. In fact, it'd be better. You wouldn't have to rely on the neighbors having to come out by the house. You don't want to do that. You want to stand right in front of his house. You want to stick your thumb in his eye, essentially. Isn't that what it's about? The annoying nature of picketing.
I don't believe it is in this case, because the picketers' desire is a desire simply to transmit their message involved, and they wish to utilize picketing, which has been recognized as a legitimate First Amendment protected means.
Why not picket him at his clinic?
You go up to Appleton or into Milwaukee, picket him at his clinic.
It's possible to picket at other locations. However, the mere fact that one can picket at another location does not permit a picketing ban in a certain location unless such a ban is narrowly tailored to support specific interests, either in safety or residential
privacy. Yes, but I think any court familiar with our cases might be more likely to uphold a ban on residential picketing if there was an opportunity to picket the individual they desired to bring the message home to somewhere else.
Certainly, alternative channels can figure in to the analysis. However, once again, the key point is this ordinance, which forbids all picketing flatly in the town of Brookfield, an ordinance which is narrowly tailored to support the interests involved.
Now, why do you say it's not narrowly tailored to support privacy and safety?
Turning first to safety, the reason why it is not narrowly tailored to support the safety interests is, number one, because the ordinance prohibits only picketing, but permits a number of expressive and non-expressive activities which can have just as severe an effect upon the interests in free vehicular movement and free pedestrian movement and the like as anything else. Furthermore, the ordinance addresses the problem in a way which does not make much sense. If the problem is with the picketer's safety and with the safety of the community, with concerns about traffic, what is done is the picketers are moved off of a property where perhaps there is less traffic and moved on to Blue Mound Road, a busy highway, where seemingly if one is concerned about safety and traffic and the like, the distractions will be greater than in the residential neighborhood.
And as to privacy?
As to privacy, the
How do you tailor this more narrowly than an absolute prohibition if you're going to protect
privacy? Number of different options are available to the town. First, with respect to the adverse effects of picketing, the town has a number of ordinances currently in effect, ordinances banning such things as littering, obstruction of the streets, and so forth, which apply equally to expressive and non-expressive activity, which could suitably apply to this case. Furthermore,
well, for example, they have an ordinance law of some kind under which picketers for crowding in such numbers on the lawn could be arrested?
Well, there's a trespass ordinance which would apply to such activity on a lawn.
And could they be arrested for violation of that ordinance?
That's correct. They could if they were on the lawn under the construction of the state constitution.
Well, is there any way they couldn't be on the lawn?
They could be on the side, on the streets. And there you have the question of whether such activity would obstruct the street. And there, what one could do, perhaps, the town has not done this. The point is the town has banned all picketing irrespective of numbers. The town could perhaps place some limitation on the numbers of picketers, some limitation on the time at which the picketers could be out there.
Let me interrupt you. You told me a minute ago that this picketing of 40 persons all day long was constitutionally protected. How could they put a limit on you mean no more than 50 is the limit?
All right.
Could they put a limit on no more than one or two?
We believe, and obviously this is a legislative question which the town would have to address, and it would present a different...
Well, no, it isn't a legislative question. You're telling us what they could constitutionally do, that they could constitutionally do these alternative things, all of which are different from what you a few minutes ago told me they could not constitutionally do.
All right. Let me clarify, then, my statement of a few minutes ago. The basic protection of picketing is something that is constitutionally protected. Certainly, numbers of picketers could be regulated to the extent that numbers of picketers interfere either with the free use of the streets or with the interest of the town in privacy.
Well, specifically, could they pass an ordinance saying that you may not picket with more than 10 persons in front of a house for more than 8 hours a day?
we would have, with respect to that ordinance, the similar analysis that would have to be applied. That is, does the ordinance...
Yeah, I understand the analysis. I'm curious to know what your answer is.
All right. My answer would be that 10 picketers would raise a severe question because there would be a question as to whether
limitations... I understand there's a severe question, but what's the answer to it?
Okay. I would say that that would not be constitutional because there would not be a significant enough impact upon public safety interests to justify.
In other words, you're giving me the same answer you did before. The picketing that you engaged in, you think, was constitutionally protected. And therefore, these alternatives about changing numbers or hours are purely just argument. You don't really believe that.
I would... The question with respect to whether the picketers would believe that or not, I think, would largely be determined if the town passed such an ordinance, would the picketers then challenge it as an unreasonable limitation on their speech? And that's a question for a future case.
Well, but it isn't so much what the picketers were, that you are giving answers saying, although the town can't do what it's done, it could do these other things. But then that seems inconsistent with the answer that you think the Constitution protects the way you actually picketed here, which would be prohibited by some of the alternatives you propose. So the question, how serious are you about the alternative?
I would answer the question this way. We're serious about the alternatives. It's possible that some of the picketers' activities might have violated the Constitution under a narrowly tailored ordinance. This ordinance, however, is not narrowly tailored. And in...
Suppose we thought that as applied to the picketing that actually had taken place and presumably would take place again, the ordinance was quite constitutional. What if we thought that? Shouldn't we then... just sustain the ordinance? What else do you have to offer?
I would again go back to points that have been emphasized with respect to the entire discussion of this case. What is not involved here is an enforcement action on picketing which took place after.
Well, I know, but if this is a facial attack, let's suppose this is a facial attack, and suppose we say that as applied to this picketing, as found by the district court, this ordinance is quite constitutional. Now, isn't your only rejoinder then, well, that may be so, but it's overbroad.
That's right. You know, that's right. If our activity is not protected, then it becomes an overbred challenge.
And then what do we have to do? Do we have to imagine the reach of the ordinance, or is there some evidence? We don't even know how it may not be substantially overbroad.
That's perhaps a question that would then have to be determined at trial. There might have to be additional facts and so forth put out as to the enforcement policies of the town, which might need to be dealt with at that point.
Well, that may be, but to do that, we should just, reverse? We should reverse the Court of Appeals?
No,
we could never decide an overbreadth case if we had to do that, to go back and see exactly how the statute would be applied in these situations. That's not how we do overbreadth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, overbreadth.
It's overbroad.
Right. Overbreadth is basically a question of applying the sweep of the statute and, in essence, determining that the statute can apply very clearly to protected activity. And so that's apparent with respect to this ordinance, which bans all residential picketing in a neighborhood without any concern.
Have we ever applied overbreadth to an ordinance or a statute dealing just with picketing?
I believe the Thornhill the Thornhill case, in which overbreadth was first utilized, was a picketing case. So picketing cases are subject to overbreadth analysis.
Have you ever checked how many times Thornhill has been cited?
I have not checked out how many times, but I believe with some degree of frequency in my reading of this Court's First Amendment cases in preparation here.
In your answer to Justice Stevens, you indicated that privacy is a protectable interest as far as the state is concerned, privacy of homes?
Privacy of homes is a protectable interest.
Can it be protected from picketing? In any degree?
In applying such an analysis, what has to be determined is what precisely is the character of the privacy interest. For example, in the Keefe case, this court seemed to indicate that there were questions with respect to the application
Do you have a right to a quiet street?
Excuse me?
Is there a right to a quiet street?
There is. The residential privacy interest can extend to some extent to cover interests in tranquility and quiet. And a noise ordinance, for example, is a proper means to address that interest. But what we have
some picketing can be regulated in order to preserve the character of the residential neighborhood?
The abuses that go with certain picketing could be regulated. However, an inherent prescription of all picketing...
So picketing can interfere with privacy and with residential character, and to that extent can be regulated?
What we have is in essence, a balance in such a situation. Picketing may have some impact upon residential privacy interests. However, in looking at that analysis, it's important to remember that normally, as in the Keefe case, the interest in residential privacy does not extend to forbid activity taking place on a public forum property. Second, it's important to
realize... But you indicate it can in some instances?
The court has not applied the analysis of residential privacy to forbid activity in a public forum of the picketing nature.
Well, has the court confronted a case where the public forum doctrine is squarely measured against the interest of a homeowner in privacy and quiet?
The closest this court has come to that situation was the Carey case. And in the
and that went off on equal protection grounds.
Well, in the Carey
and in
case,
that case, we also said there is a very strong interest, very strong constitutional recognition of the right of privacy.
Granted, you're absolutely correct. However, I'd also point out that in the Perry case, in a footnote, this court indicated that its justification and the reason for its analysis in the Carey case was the presence of a public forum there. And so it would appear that public forum analysis does appropriately apply to residential streets, which are not significantly different in any major way from the streets and sidewalks in other particular areas. Furthermore, getting back to the residential privacy interest, it's important to remember.
And under Mr. and Justice Stevens' question, this could go on 365 days a year, so far as you're concerned?
I believe that it could go on for a substantial period of time, yes. Yes, it could. I think it could. However, that's an issue that, again, isn't precisely before this court, because what we have here is an absolute flat ban on all residential picketing, irrespective of how long it extends.
I don't understand how you can say the length has anything to do with it. I mean, either it invades the privacy or it doesn't invade the privacy. Does it not invade the privacy if it only happens 1 hour a day? All that means is it's a 1 hour's invasion. How does it not... I mean, some activities you can say if they're at a lower volume, you can say they don't annoy anybody. So a difference in degree can make a difference in kind. It is no longer an annoying activity. But if this is an invasion of privacy, it's an invasion of privacy whether it occurs 1 hour or 24 hours, isn't it?
We don't believe that it to a certain extent, there will always be a degree of privacy invasion. But the problem is that what has to be weighed in the balance is this privacy invasion, whatever it may be, vis-a-vis the important interests of the picketers.
Right. Now, let's talk about that. What is it that you can only do by picketing that you can't do by some other form of activity? Handing out leaflets, parading around the picketing in the sense in which this ordinance uses the term, parading around the whole neighborhood, handing out leaflets, picketing or doing whatever you want in front of the doctor's offices. What is there distinctive about this? Is there anything distinctive about this activity except the invasion of this man's privacy?
What is distinctive about picketing activity is that it, by use of signs, and by use of perhaps a limited degree of movement, creates a place where people can determine and people can see a message that is broadcast by way of signs. And there's a question that could perhaps be turned the other way with respect to that. What is the significant difference between picketing and marching? If marching is to be prohibited, what is there about picketing that makes it so substantially different that there is a more extensive need to regulate such activity?
I suggest if you have a parade in your neighborhood and then have a picket at your house, you'll see the difference.
Perhaps so, perhaps so. The essential question, though, that has to be determined when one deals with the interest in residential privacy is that this interest is not an interest in restricting content. The mere emotional impact that one may receive from the content of speech is not relevant. That, I believe, is the message of the Booz case. What's involved here, and what's critical to remember, is that this ordinance would prohibit picketing activity, whether it were friendly or unfriendly. For example, one under this ordinance could go back and forth in front of Dr. Victoria's house, indicating that Dr. Victoria adhered to the finest standards of the medical profession. If one were to do that, under this ordinance, it would be prohibited under the definition that the town has utilized.
The doctor would probably invite him in for a cup of coffee.
He might. He could also report them to the police. Anything is possible under this ordinance.
If they liked him that much, of course, they'd go away if he asked them, I'm sure. You know, we'd open the door and say, gee, I really like that, but you fellows are invading my privacy. What you could best do if you really like me is to be gone.
Yeah, well, The key point here is, though, the ordinance sweeps so broadly that it prohibits all these types of activity. And furthermore, the presence of the interest in residential privacy is an interest which must be considered without respect to the content of speech. If the town's real interest is prevention of embarrassment to Dr. Victoria, then such an interest should be appropriately dealt with in other fashions, but the First Amendment does not seem to protect an interest in avoiding the embarrassment or other emotional harm which may result from this type of activity or from other types of content-based activity.
The town is willing to let you march around Dr. Victoria's neighborhood with a sign saying Dr. Victoria is an abortionist or whatever harsher language you want to use. They're not worried about protecting him from criticism. They're willing to let you do that.
However,
they just don't want you to annoy him in his home.
The town's ordinance, though.
Is there anything to stop you from picketing his office? No.
No.
So he's right. Oh, you don't want him in his office?
Thank you, Mr. McDowell. The case is submitted.
The Honorable Court is now adjourned until Monday next at 10 o'clock.